You are listening to an ADIS podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Ophthalmology and Therapy podcast on Vernal Care to Conjunctivitis, a Patient-Centered Approach. My name is Anne-Catherine Larsen. I'm a consultant at the Department of Ophthalmology at Rigshospitalet Glostrup in Copenhagen, Denmark. And I'm joined by Marie-Louise Rød Rasmussen. She's an associate professor and senior consultant at the Department of Ophthalmology, Rigshospitalet Glostrup, also Copenhagen, Denmark.
Hello.
And today we'll be discussing vernal care to conjunctivitis in children. We will discuss briefly what type of eye disease this is, how it affects daily living, how to treat it with a patient-centered approach. So, for start, what is vernal care to conjunctivitis, and especially who is affected by this disease?
Vernal care to conjunctivitis is a rare but severe form of allergic conjunctivitis that affects mainly children. 80% of the kids have a debut before the age of 10, mostly in the 3 to 6 years old period. And it's a disease who mainly affect boys. Boys are affected 3 to 4 times more often than girls. We see vernal care to conjunctivitis globally, but most commonly observed in the Mediterranean region, the Middle East, Africa, Central America, the Indian subcontinent, and less frequent in Northern Europe, North America, and Australia. We know that vernal care to conjunctivitis is more prevalent in patients with a family history of atopy, but an actual genetic component had not been identified.
What does vernal mean?
Vernal translate into spring, but although vernal care to conjunctivitis is characterized by exacerbation in the spring and summer months, around 60% of the patients also experience flare-up in the winter time.
Okay, so Marie-Louise, is it possible for an adult to have vernal care to conjunctivitis?
It is possible, but it's extremely rare. We have seen publications where they have figured out that it's around 2 to 3% of the entire population of patients with vernal care to conjunctivitis who are adults. And therefore, this group will not be discussed in this podcast.
What are the typical symptoms of vernal care to conjunctivitis?
Vernal care to conjunctivitis is characterized by an allergic inflammation on the surface of the eye. In the mucosal lining, you can say that it's the backside of the eyelids and the front of the eye, including the cornea, and that give severe, when the mucosa gets irritated, it starts secreting more mucus. It also swollen, so you see redness, you see edema, you see a lot of mucus. Often it starts itching and you get a foreign body sensation within the eye because of this swelling. It feels like you have something in the eye. And if the cornea gets really irritated, you get photophobia as well. If you are heavily affected, you will experience pain as well.
Okay. And what are the typical findings we as doctors see?
We see these edemas in the skin around the eye, but we also see a redness in the skin. We see conjunctival hyperemia, which it is called when you have redness in the eye, in the white of the eye. You can see the sticky mucus on the eyelashes. And if you invert the upper eyelid, you can see papillas like dots on the upper eyelids in the tarsal conjunctiva. In these patients, these can enlarge so heavily that we actually call them cobblestones papilla. which means that they are extremely big, like small rocks on the backside, and the mucosa is 4 to 6 times as thick as a normal conjunctiva. In the cornea, you see an intense ocular surface inflammation causing small erosions in the corneal surface. We call that superficial punctate keopathy. You see all the vessels, the blood vessels. Normally you won't even see them on the eye, but now they are standing out very clearly like a red lines into the cornea. We call that pannus formation, and we see wounds, corneal ulcers, and these can become quite heavy. And in this disease, we call them shield ulcers when they are really big. Furthermore, in the area, the thin ring around the cornea, we call that the limbal area, we see small white yellowish noduli. We call them those Hornertransfer dots, and they are a sign of the immune system being extremely active in the area. You need to have one of these three key findings to have vernal keratoconjunctivitis, which means you need to have transfer dots, these yellowish white nodules around the cornea. You need to have giant papillas, or you need to have a shield ulcus to have the diagnosis of a vernal keratoconjunctivitis. But you don't need to have all three. One of them is enough. And we see some have a disease where they're mostly affected on the upper eyelid, others are more severely affected on the cornea. And some have a combination of all of it.
Okay. How frequent are these corneal complications?
They are quite frequent. They are observed in around less than half of the patients, and if they are left untreated, they will develop keratitis, they will develop a thinning of the cornea, and worst case, they will perforate and there will be a hole in the eye. So it's an extremely dangerous situation.
Is it always both eyes that are affected?
No, and that is actually quite interesting, because often when the smaller children, they start out having this disease, we always suspect them to have keratitis because it's one eye. One eye is always worse than the other. But then over time, it's gradually fades up, so they are getting equally affected, both eyes. But we do have patients where it's only one eye who is really affected. But for the majority, for 98%, it's both eyes.
Do the children usually grow out of vernal keratoconjunctivitis?
We say that normally it's a children's disease, and when they become teenagers, the disease will diminish. For some of these children, we see that every summer they are less affected, mainly from the year of 12 years old, 13 years old, they are getting less affected, 14, and then it suddenly almost disappears. But it never totally disappears. For many of these children, it goes on like an allergic conjunctivitis in some way for the rest of their life. So there will be some symptoms left, but it will diminish in severity quite frequently. And then we have some who actually just keep going. And we can't explain why it has this pattern. There's been lots of thoughts about sex hormones, that it affects the immune system in some way, but that we don't know these issues.
So going on, how does severe vernal keratoconjunctivitis affect daily life?
If you are really ill of vernal keratoconjunctivitis, the children, when we see these patients in the waiting area, we know already by looking at them how bad it is, because if it's really bad, they come with sunglasses inside. They wear caps. They have their hoodies covering their eyes, or they're actually behaving like they're blind because they don't want to open up their eyes. Parents can tell us stories about living in the darkness because these children won't have the light turned on. So if they're going to go out for dinner, they're going to shut down the light in the entire kitchen or dining area, else the child won't be able to come out and eat. These kids don't want to go outside, especially when the sun's out. They wake up during the night because it hurts, and they had all this secretion in the eye when they wake up in the morning that they can't open their eyes. And these kids are often called home from kindergarten or from school because adults, teachers think they have a conjunctivitis that will be infectious, or they are so much in pain and suffering that they can't really take part in the activities. Usually they don't attend any leisure activities, so it has a significant limit on their daily activities, and it affects the child's psychosocial well-being and diminishes their overall quality of life from the entire family.
Okay, so regarding the treatment in a stepwise manner of this disease, what does that mean?
Well, we have made a guideline where we tried to make the treatment as less intensive as needed. So we don't want to give children medicine if they are not in really need, both due to the side effects, but also due to cost. And the huge thing about compliance when you are having ill children, because they can't remember to have eye drops by themselves. There need to be an adult available to put these eye drops into the eye of the child. And the child might not want the eye drops. So you really need to be careful about how much you put on pressure for these parents to put into the eye of their children. So we often start out by, you can say, the lowest level is actually to explain what this is all about. Then we start giving anti-allergic eye drops. We give those to all the patients we are having in our clinics. They don't take it all, but they will take the basic of it. And there's no side effects to anti-allergic eye drops. We use unpreserved eye drops, and then we use artificial tears. For most pediatric vernal keratoconjunctivitis children we are seeing, they need the next steps. They need steroids. Steroids are always working. And sometimes it's just a matter of how much you are giving. But with steroids and increasing load, you see increasing side effects. So it's really a balance. We always fear to have a raise in the tension of the eye. That's a kind of glaucoma, but it will disappear if we stop giving them these eye drops. Secondly, if we give steroids over several years, the child will develop cataract. So, and lots of other side effects. So we really need to balance the use of steroids compared to the severity of the disease, but it's steroids who actually works when we are in an acute phase. If we can treat the symptoms down with steroids for a short period of time, we'll do that. If the child is fine after that, they will go on with anti-allergic eye drops and things will be good. However, if they have a constant need of steroids or they're having flare-up every month, we need to use something else. And then we use cyclosporin. Cyclosporin can be used, it doesn't have the same terms of action as steroids. It's less potent, but if you use it every day, 3 to 4 times a day, it can actually work on the eye as steroids, and it doesn't have the same side effects. It doesn't have risk of glaucoma, it doesn't have risk of severe eye disease. However, it itches and it gives a red eye sometimes, especially in the beginning, and it takes 3 to 6 months for cyclosporine to work. So quite often we need to bridge these patients with a combination of both anti-allergic eye drops, steroids and cyclosporine for quite a long time to get it calm, and then the patient will continue to have cyclosporine and anti-allergic drops, both without long-term side effects. And that's the main goal of this treatment. But we are hesitating sometimes because cyclosporine is quite expensive.
So what do you do if giving eye drops is not a possibility?
Sometimes we have children where it's quite complicated to have so many eye drops. And then we can make a deposit of steroids. It's called Kenalog. And we can put that subtarsal in the upper eyelid. So you actually put them to surgery, put them in general anesthesia, and you put medication below the upper eyelid, which will work for 3 to 12 months and slowly release the medication. And it works extremely well. It works within a week and you see an improvement. So often the children are very bad, very bad. They come with sunglasses. They have all the symptoms I described. We will put them in general anesthesia and put Kenalog, because then we can start having an examination. We can start talking to the parents and they can start thriving again, because it has such a huge impact. So we need to think about side effects, but also about the social well-being of that child. But we are always having a little bit of fear that maybe this child would have a raised intention. And if they have so, we need to treat that. We need to monitor the pressure in the eye. We need to give eye drops sometimes. We even have some kids who had glaucoma surgery to tolerate the Kenalog. But we can treat glaucoma, we can treat cataract, we can't treat a cornea who melts away.
Okay, what about the association of allergy in vernal keratoconjunctivitis conjunctivitis?
That's a very, very frequent question. The parents always come and ask, what is it that my child is allergic to? Why is this happening? And we often see there are some allergic manifestation, such as asthma or allergic rhinoconjunctivitis and eczema. And the children are often sensitized to one or more inhalation allergens if you test them. Among patients where there's no allergic manifestation, they often ain't sensitized if you test them. They have a negative skin prick test. But around half of the patients do have. And that's mostly towards pollen and dust mites.
How many are seasonal of these allergies?
Mainly around 60%.
Okay, then do you send all your patients for allergy testing?
Almost, yes. And I do that because if they have an allergy, and we need to be clear that one thing is to have a sensitivity on the skin prick test or have increased IgE in your blood test. That is just that your immune system has discovered that these things could be dangerous. But to have a real allergy, you need to both have a positive test and actually react when you are exposed to it. And we do see that a lot of these kids, they go and have a test and they're not sensitive to anything of the things we're testing against. But we need to remember that every day we are exposed to more than 2 million different particles within our daily life, and we are testing for the 10 most frequent. So there's lots of things we don't know, and we also, but we do know that if you test specifically within the tears of the eye, you'll find much more, a much higher rate of allergies, but that's impossible to do on kids.
So what are the implications of finding allergies?
You can say if you have a suspicion and you know that it's always getting worse in May, June, and you suspect grass allergy, it has a relevance, because then you can actually, you call it vaccinate against it, but it's a kind of sensibilization where you get a small amount of grass every day in a tablet before bedtime, and then you can actually diminish the immune reaction to it. And you can get that sort of treatment in Europe for grass, for birch, and now also for dust mites. There are other possibilities if you have other specific allergies, but then you need to have a needle with the allergen every week or a second week or something. It takes years. So that's a kind of long run. But also if you have a pet, if you have a cat and you are suspecting that maybe you are allergic to cat, you could get rid of the cat. And you have to might clean your house very, very significantly. Or people are thinking about having a dog. It might not be a good idea if they're sensitive to dog. Secondly, if you know your season, you can look it up on the internet, on your mobile phone. You can have the pollen numbers of the day, and you know when to be more careful. Furthermore, we tell our patients to wash their hands and face if they come in from outside, being out playing, because then they can wash the allergies away. So, and secondly, if they are having asthma or they are having rhinoconjunctivitis, it makes total sense, because then you can also treat their nose and their asthma more sufficiently.
Okay. So what about atopic keratoconjunctivitis? How does this differ from vernal keratoconjunctivitis?
That's a difficult question. You can say in the literature, it's described as that vernal keratoconjunctivitis is for children, and atopic keratoconjunctivitis are from teenagers and younger adults. However, we see a lot of children with atopic dermatitis who comes and have a picture of vernal keratoconjunctivitis, but they tend not to have the giant papillas, but they have all the symptoms. And you can say in adults, they show kind of same picture with the corneal complications. So we have started to be, I wouldn't say we didn't, don't, doesn't matter, doesn't, it doesn't matter, but it's the same treatment these patients are needing. But for all patients, both the children and the adults with atopic dermatitis, we need to take care of their skin. And we need to give extra attention for the compliance for the patient and the parents, because there's so much treatment. They need all the types of ointment on their skin. They need to remember their asthma medication, and now they need to remember three different types of eye drops. So it's a huge, huge task the parents have to take care of all these issues at the same times. But we see it more like a spectrum.
So back to vernal keratoconjunctivitis, what are the key elements in your patient-centered approach in children?
You can't get compliance if the patient and the parents doesn't understand what this is all about. So we spend quite a lot of time explaining why, what, when. There's so many eye drops. They need to understand the side effects. Why can't they just use steroids all the time? What is the economy in this? What is the reimbursement? Why should all drops be unpreservative? And then we give a lot of advices. We have a lot of patient folders now. We have developed that. And then in every consultation, we give a plan A. That's the main plan. That's what they need to do and use for every day to keep the vernal keratoconjunctivitis away. But we do know many of these patients will have flare-ups. And what are they allowed to do when they have a flare-up? Usually, it's a plan where they can use steroids for one or two times a day for a week or maybe 2 weeks. And if that doesn't work, they need to contact us, both so we can follow up on it, but also if we need to measure the eye pressure. And then we are quite available. We are available every day because when these children have a flare-up, it's now. It's not in 3 days' time, it's now. And the faster we get a plan, they start using steroids, they are diminishing the inflammation, the faster it will go away. And then we have quite a skilled team where we work together with glaucoma specialists. We have pediatric ophthalmologists, we have opticians, special opticians, and we have a very good collaboration with pediatrics at other hospitals and dermatologists, so we can communicate around the patient and the parents.
How do you examine these children?
Well, in normal circumstances, we are quite good at getting a look. We don't need to look a long time. Usually 1 or 2 seconds is what we get the first time. But my feeling is that we have improved quite well in that. Sometimes you can't see a thing, and then you need to guess. You need to guess on what the parents tells you, and then you start the treatment in hope that this will improve the situation and ask them to come back in a week's time or two. However, if that doesn't work, we need to put the patients into general anesthesia and we need to see what's actually happening. And in these cases, we sometimes put in Kenalog. If we evert the eyelids and find out this is really vernal keratoconjunctivitis, then we can treat it, or we can treat the shield ulcer. But other times we have tried that we put these children to general anesthesia and then it wasn't vernal keratoconjunctivitis, it was something else. And that's also quite important that we need to see what it is. But we have the benefit of being mainly two doctors, myself and Anne-Katrine. So we know our patients, we know the parents, and that gives quite an improvement in compliance for these kids.
So Marie-Louise, what do you think is the most rewarding aspect of treating these children with vernal keratoconjunctivitis?
Oh, I always get so emotional because it's so great to see these kids coming back without sunglasses. They are smiling. They are having their eyes open. The parents are almost crying because now they're finally asleep. The whole family is eating dinner together and the kids are going back to school. So it's really a transformation in some way, where you also, over the years, you see these children grow and they are so cool. And some of the kids, they are so experienced and they are able to drop their own eyes and take care of themselves. And that's really fascinating.
So have you ever transformed a life?
Yeah, when you attend the American Academy of Ophthalmology, they always talk about if you have you ever transformed a life? And when you're treating vernal keratoconjunctivitis, you are transforming lives. And a good example is a boy I've followed in the last couple of years. He started out when he was 3 years old coming to the eye department, he had a quite severe keratitis, and nobody could see what actually happened, but we suspected herpes. And it was treated, he was dismissed. He came back another year after with a new keratitis on the same eye. Actually the same period of time of the year in June. And then he was diagnosed with vernal keratoconjunctivitis. And at that time, when they finally had a look at it, his right eye was okay, but the left eye had a huge, huge astigmatism and a scarring. So he wasn't able to see anything. He had a 0.3 vision, which is around approximately 30% vision on that eye. And they tried patching, they tried various eye drops with steroids, and he became better, but he wasn't really able to see that much. I started seeing him for 4 years ago, where we started up cyclosporin 3 times a day. And then he was about to start school, but he was not able actually to sit inside classes because he was so light sensitive still. So, and if you go to a Danish school, you don't have cardboards any longer. You have modern active boards. It's like a huge, huge computer screen where the teacher can write on this electronic board inside the classes, and he couldn't look at it and he couldn't stay there. So we had to give him filtered glasses that had color shifting. But after some years on cyclosporin and anti-allergic eye drops, he stopped having flare-ups. And his vision actually improved because the scarring diminished over time. So now he's having almost normal vision on that eye. He doesn't need any glasses. And you can still see the scarring. We can't get that away. That will never disappear. But he has a reasonable vision, about 80% vision on that eye. And he has started to do leisure activities. But I spent the last 2 years actually mainly discussing with him and his mom how he can spend more time outside, because he'd never been outside when he was a smaller child. He always stayed inside. So it's a transformation of being, pushing him in a normal social, physical development. So he start playing football now. But that, it's a happy family and a happy boy. So that's really great.
That's really great. Are there, as far as you know, any new treatments in the pipeline?
The short answer is no. I would wish there were.
Yeah. Okay. What type of treatment would you wish for in the future?
I would wish for some sort of long-active cyclosporin, or you have a similar drug which is not allowed in Europe, tacrolimus, where it was long-lasting. So you could give it as a deposit, like we do with the Kenalog, or you could put it as a punctal plug. But it's always it's a huge compliance thing to take an eye drop 4 times a day when you're a child. So normally it doesn't work. So we can get patients to drop 3 times a day, but if we could get a drop where it was only 1 time a day, or you had something who lasted longer, that would be amazing. Secondly, I would like to have tacrolimus in Europe. Even though it's not better working than cyclosporin, it could give more competition, and it could also help us, because sometimes cyclosporin is out of stock in Europe, we can't get it, and that puts us in a terrible situation. So it would be less vulnerable if we had both drugs available.
Okay, so thank you very much for all your great answers, Marie-Louise. That concludes my questions.
Thank you. And thank you for your time.
You are listening to an ADIS podcast. You can listen to more podcasts by subscribing to ADIS podcast with your preferred podcast provider, or by visiting the journal website. For a full list of declarations, including funding and author disclosure statements, please read the article on the journal website.